Like every athlete, there's always a lot of thought about what comes next, because you do know that you got to jump outside that bubble of professional sport at some stage. I had an injury, it turned out to be like a 3.5 year injury in my Achilles. I hadn't retired, but I'd been moved on from the Brumbies, where I'd been for 5 or 6 years. And in that time, that's where the start of thinking about life after rugby and business came from. And I was always interested in health and fitness, and I wasn't going to be the type of person that would thrive in a 9-to-5. The pandemic hit, and the pandemic just shined a light on the whole wellness industry. We're a group wellness offering, large group size ice baths and hot baths and saunas and Normatec compression boots and hyperbaric chamber and dry float beds and things like that. So it's been an interesting ride, and I don't think the industry is slowing down. I think that the wellness aspect of living longer and living healthier, I think it's here to stay. All the treatment I was getting, all the recovery stuff I was doing as an athlete, was almost impossible to get access to. And if it was, you had to go to like a really expensive day spa. So I just thought this whole concept, I was starting to see the evolution of a few infrared saunas were popping up in the back of some physiotherapy locations, or a gym was putting in a cryotherapy, and just started to think along these lines of what about like a one-stop shop offering for wellness and recovery, but not for athletes, but so people can feel like athletes. You spend the healthiest years trying to become wealthy, and then you get wealthy. Once you're wealthy, you spend that wealth trying to become healthy. So making sure that there's balance in it.
Stephen Hoyles, how are you, mate?
I'm well, thanks, Brad. Thanks for having me.
Mate, I'm very pleased to have you. It's been about 20 years since I've seen your face.
Yeah, we crossed paths a long time ago down at Randwick, didn't we?
Yeah, it was good old times. I wasn't much of a rugby boy, but I got involved for a year. And
yeah, I remember the boys taking a liking to you. You'd come over from Penrith Rugby League, and I think the guys in Randwick appreciated the blue-collar approach you brought to rugby, and I remember they did enjoy you. You were involved in the year that the club had a lot of success, weren't you?
Yeah, well, I think it was three grand finals, third, seconds, first. So yeah. It was a good fun.
Yeah, and that was the last time we'd had that type of success until last year. So it's been a long time.
Yeah, well, you coached them last year, didn't you?
Yeah. I was just trying to get to that so we could talk up my coaching credentials. I went back and coached last year. I'm doing it again this year, the first grade side, and yeah, loving that.
So we can just associate you with winning.
There's a lot of losing in between. I suppose that's why you love the game, because the highs it can bring you, and those couple of years were definitely up there.
Yeah, totally. Well, we'll get into under the hood today.
Yep.
Yeah. And, as always with this sort of discussion, mate, there's a bit in your head, there's a little bit around your life, but we are talking to an audience that is interested in business, interested in all things sort of entrepreneurship, leadership. And I think you got lots to offer there, mate. And you're wearing the hat.
Yeah, I wear a few hats. Yeah. But this is the recovery hat. And this is it's a business that we started 4 years ago, or the concept started probably 5 years ago now. And then really enjoying it. It's taken us down a path that, we did plan for this, and we didn't know when we opened it how much success we'd have or what is success, but it's definitely taken it came at the right time. We got there before the pandemic hit, and the pandemic just shined a light on the whole wellness industry. And we're a group wellness offering, large group size ice baths and hot baths and saunas and Normatec compression boots and hyperbaric chamber and dry float beds and things like that. So it's been an interesting ride, and I don't think the industry is slowing down. I think that the wellness aspect of living longer and living healthier, I think it's here to stay.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. One of our earlier guests, Dean Gladstone.
Yeah, I know Dino well.
Yeah,
Dino actually.
Yeah, you would have been around your neck of the woods.
Yeah.
And great athlete, great
really
person. I actually did ice bath with him.
Yeah.
Breath work 4 or 5 years ago now, and brought him on the podcast. We talked all about ice baths, so I can see this. I'm really living the world that you're part of. I do the ice bath thing, the whole thing, but I want to rip this apart a little bit more. And unfortunately for some of the rugby tragics, we will talk rugby, I think, at some point.
We don't have to,
but yeah, we'll talk
business. You can if you want.
Yeah, yeah, we'll talk a little bit. Yeah. But for you tragics out there that want to hear Stephen talk about the Brumbies and his injuries, we're just going to bypass that for a little bit.
That's
if that's
okay,
all right.
Yeah.
So, mate, let's look at recovery. I want to rip it apart. So let's go back to where you got into business in the first place. So you have this career, right? You're juggling a few balls and you get into Anytime Fitness. Can we just go back there, just because I want to understand how this all started?
Yeah, like every athlete, there's always a lot of thought in their career, whether they like to admit it or not, they're always thinking about what comes next, because you do know that the, you know, you got to jump outside that bubble of professional sport at some stage. And rugby does a good job in trying to prepare players for life after sport, but there's no one size fits all. Everyone's different. And I knew really early on that based on my time at school, or probably my lack of time in detentions at school, that I wasn't designed to sit in a classroom all day, and I wasn't going to be the type of person that would thrive in a 9-to-5 and working for someone else. Not to say I've got a problem with learning from other people, but yeah. I just knew the 9-to-5 wasn't for me. And I had an injury. I'd end up having a – turned out to be like a 3.5-year injury in my Achilles while I was playing. And I hadn't retired, but I'd been moved on from the Brumbies, where I'd been for 5 or 6 years, 2 kids at that stage, and wasn't looking good at all. I end up fast forwarding a few years to going over to Sweden to get that foot operated on, and lucky enough got to come back and finish my career where I'd started at the Tars in a couple of years that were really successful there. And
well, threes is a long time if I just pause there, because yeah. That's to do an Achilles. It wasn't
a snap Achilles. It was a surgery that
I heard something happened. Well. You got yeah. a piece of bone caught in there. Is that what happened?
Yeah, that's essentially what happened. I didn't find that out until I went to Sweden to see this like legendary tendon specialist. So we're sort of going nowhere here in Australia, trying to find us. Seeing the best tendon specialist here in Australia.
Yeah.
And I was getting treated for tendonitis or tendinopathy. And they said, oh, it's probably because you've got small calves. I've always had small calves, guys. This is not the reason. So I just knew the last throw of the dice was when I actually met Michael Checker, who just signed on to be the Waratah coach, who was our old Ramic coach. And he asked me to be, I hadn't played for 2 years, and he asked if I wanted to be his recruitment officer. And I was flattered and offended in the one time. I was like, no, Check, I still want to play. And he's like, oh, I didn't mean to offend you. And I said, no. And I got home from that meeting, said to my wife, had 2 young kids at the time, said, no, we've got to go to this guy in Sweden. Sent some emails, made some phone calls. I was on a flight within 10 days, and my father and I went over, and you know, the shortest version is I got it fixed, and I was back playing 8 months later in Michael Checker's side that won the title. We actually got our 10-year reunion tonight, funnily enough.
That's awesome, man. Yeah.
So,
big turning moment for you, right?
Yeah, and in that time, like, that's where the start of thinking about life after rugby and business came from. And I was always interested in health and fitness and, you know, things that I had a passion for. And so I bought an Anytime Fitness franchise. A mate of mine had started one up here in St. Leonard's, and he was a young guy doing really well. He was a plumber, but he was onto his third Anytime Fitness, and I got chatting with him. I actually got chatting with him because I was training with him when I was injured.
Yeah, okay.
So end up going down that path for a couple of years, got involved, had one down the south coast in Batemans Bay, one in Perth in Subiaco, and then was helping another mate of mine get his one open up in Grafton. And I suppose the biggest lesson we learned there, like the sell of Anytime Fitness at the time, was you can be anywhere in the world and you can open these and you don't need staff and people just sign up and give you money. And
it's a pretty compelling offer, isn't it?
And you were seeing the success early, like it was going really well. And so went sort of all in on that, and South Coast worked well because we're living in Canberra, so it was a couple of hours from the coast. It was Batemans Bay. Got that open, learnt a whole lot in that time. Had a couple of mates involved with me at the time from rugby, and went through that whole journey of learning lease negotiation, site inspections, fit out costs, compliance with head office, franchise training, doing everything. Like it was a lot of fun. And then
threw right into business.
Yeah, like yeah. Went right into it. And then I was back and forth from Sydney and Canberra, and then I sort of got to the stage, I was like, oh, this isn't going to be sustainable going up and down the coast every 2 weeks with a young family. So pretty quickly got back into rugby. Like that was while I was injured. So I was going through that whole journey. It was a great distraction because I had my mind on starting a business. And if the career didn't keep going from a rugby point of view, I had the business chance avenue to go through. But I was still really driven and desperate to finish on my terms in rugby. Everyone had thought I'd retired. I hadn't, but I just hadn't played for 2.5 years, and I was 30, I suppose, or 29. So got back into rugby, then got out of the Anytime Fitness. I saw this F45 industry taking off and knew the guys there pretty well, like Rob Deutsch and Adam Gilchrist. They're rugby guys, and ended up getting the Coogee territory with a couple of boys that I was playing with at the time, Mitch Chapman and Adam Ashley Cooper. And Coogee's where I've been my whole life and knew it well. So
local stomping ground. Yeah.
So I opened that up and went down that path. That was really enjoyable. And that's how we ended up getting a really small site. And for 3 or 4 years, it was great. But it was basic capacity within a month after we opened, and which was a good problem, but it was still a problem. And Coogee's a hard place to find commercial property unless you want to pay through the nose down on the beachfront. And so we looked for another space. We had a few false starts with a couple of places and end up finding the old BWS on Coogee Bay Road, which was relocated into a Dan Murphy's to take over the old rugby club.
Yeah, okay.
And that was like, that was way too big. Like, we didn't need all of that space. So that got me thinking, we've got 200 odd square meters here. We can either rent it out and like a physio or chiro. There's so many people that would want this space. But I always thought that there was something more within this industry. The F45 thing hadn't plateaued. It was still buzzing. But I just retired from this at this stage, and I'd just sort of gone through that whole, there's a lot of sides to retiring. There's the emotional attachment to your teammates, and I didn't struggle with that because I kind of stayed in club rugby and played a little bit, opened the gym at F45, so I still felt like I was involved in a team.
You were still part of it, yeah.
But what I actually missed the most, I sound silly, but I missed the ability to keep myself in great shape, not by training, because everyone can train. Everyone can learn to train and lift and run. And what I realized I missed the most is being able to help get my body fixed. And I realized through a career that I was bashed. I probably wasn't designed to be a rugby forward in hindsight, like not a huge amount of muscle mass. So I had 12 surgeries during my career. And that was fine while I was playing because you had physio every day. You go and get your knee fixed.
There's always someone there to support.
That's right.
Yeah. There's a system of support around you. Yeah.
I was one of those guys that spent every spare minute on the physio table, and unashamedly I needed physios to get through my career. And you can't get that when you retire. But all the treatment I was getting, all the recovery stuff I was doing as an athlete was almost impossible to get access to. And if it was, you had to go to like a really expensive day spa, or you had to go be a member at Allianz Footy Stadium, which, you know, it's a expensive outlay. So I just thought this whole concept, I was starting to see the evolution of a few infrared saunas were popping up in the back of some physiotherapy locations, or a gym was putting in a cryotherapy, and just started to think along these lines of what about like a one-stop shop offering for wellness and recovery, but not for athletes, but so people can feel like athletes.
Yeah, the weekend warrior can come in and feel like they're getting the same experience.
Yeah, and so early on I caught up with a good mate of mine who's been business partner from day one, and we had a chat on Coogee Bay Road. I remember where I was sitting, and Nick Bardet is his name, and he's a good schoolmate, and he'd been in multiple businesses, and he'd been involved in Polite and Public, Cali Press. He was involved in the founding group there. And so I sort of went to him and spoke about it. I knew he was always had an eye on, you know, entrepreneuring and backing himself and things like that. So we sort of just went with this idea of, let's think about this group wellness offering, big size ice bars. And I kind of explain it. It's like what you used to see at the footy stadium. If you remember at Allianz, you'd have there was a big hot tub and there was a shared sauna. There wasn't a cold bath, but it was just starting to see the increase of the ice bars. And we'd been doing this stuff for 20 years and I hated it, but I knew it worked. So we just did some, went and spoke to another person for advice, Trevor Folsom. And so he's what you'd say is a good mentor of mine. He's had successful businesses his whole life. And he owns a business now called Investable. And Investable is more about, it's an investing club, but it's more, they invest in tech. Mainly so, they've got a strict briefing and it's definitely not health and wellness, but he was interested from day dot. So it's been the three of us, and then my wife's involved and Trev's wife was involved and Nick's full-time and Nick's wife are all quite close, and it's been pretty cool to sort of start it at the three and then go to where we are now.
Yeah, it's amazing. So you've pulled this the A-team together and you've got this idea that, yeah, clearly, and it makes sense to me that how can I – support the average Joe blogs to go in and find this sort of wellness experience. It is pretty hard to get. You know, before that, it was like I had to go and buy an ice bath, or I've got to get a little thing out the back and pour ice in it, or I've got to go to a specific person that has a specific service. In that you're creating this sort of one stop shop, right? So how did the team get together? And I guess it does have that startup mindset anyway, right? Like you talk about a tech startup, there's not dramatically different principles. Mm-hmm. You had to prove your product and go from there. What was the evolution from site one to where we are today?
Yeah, look, the evolution is probably It's funny. Some people walk into Coogee and they say, I love Coogee. It's great. And we look in and go, like, Coogee's, it was designed by us. Like, we have this idea and this where this should be and that was where that should be. We've since for site 2 and 3 and the ones coming, we've got an architect on board and another architect firm and design company. And so they look similar, but very different. Cronulla and Manly look pretty similar because they were built within 6 months of each other in 2023. Coogee's like our spiritual home that some people love. And we sort of look at it and think, oh, what did we put that there for? Like, we've made some internal changes. We've added a hyperbaric chamber. Coogee started off with a cafe on the street. That's kind of one example of, you know, we didn't get everything right. We thought a cafe would be perfect. Gym next door, wellness center inside. Sort of
drilled them in.
Proper barista.
Okay. Yep.
Then we sort of worked out really quickly that the effort you're going to sell what you needed to sell 800 coffees a day, that's like getting 3 or 4 more people through the recovery services a day. So we sort of.
It's not a good return on it.
That's right. And we end up realizing pretty quickly that, you know, we're a wellness center. We're not. And a lot of people said, why don't you do a gym and a cafe? I've got this great idea. And I was like, they can work in certain places, but we weren't experts in all those fields. We just thought a standalone wellness center, that's different from having an ice bath and a sauna in a gym, because a lot of our customers don't like gyms. They've never been in the gym industry. They're ocean swimmers or they're cyclists or runners. They just don't like the gym. Not everyone does. So we wanted to make sure people felt comfortable walking in. They weren't walking into a gym. They were walking into a wellness center that has personal and shared services.
So what's it feel like for a customer? So if I walk in and I want to get the most out of it, my membership, I'm assuming there's a membership.
Yeah, there's membership. Yeah. There's multiple memberships. On a summary on that is there's a really clear split between, and we probably, again, thought that it would be all membership based on the gym industry. We're probably only 50% of memberships and the intro offer, and another 45 to 50 is through multi-packs and walk-ins. So similar to the Pilates yoga model where you buy a 10-pack, we've got a high number of those. We've also got a high number of members. So what we thought was going to be probably 90% memberships, it isn't. But the good thing about that is that allows a fair bit of space in the day for people to still book in. Yep. The experience should be on your first visit, you should be walked through and you should be shown what all the services are. And it should be assumed that you've never done anything like this. We don't prescribe how long you should spend in saunas. You book half hour booking. So in Coogee, you book the pools or you book the sauna. Cronulla and Manly have the options to book the cold pool and the sauna. And that's kind of where we've evolved as well. Realizing
hot, cold.
Yeah. Some people don't like cold pool, hot pool. They want cold pool, sauna. So even how we've evolved site 2 and 3 to have that offering. And then site 2 and 3, Cronulla and Manly both have a private suite, which is probably what a lot of the competition in the US where I was living for a couple of years, because I went there basically the year after we opened Coogee. And the plan was always to get there and open some studios. And the competition in the States is probably more private suites, a little bit. You walk in and you feel like you've got to be quiet and you've got to walk in, you've got to be calm, and it's that day spa feeling. That's what the private suites offer. Whereas we've been really big on making sure it's like a big open shared experience. So you could be sitting in an ice bath with 3 other people, and sometimes people are talking to each other to distract them through the pain that they're going through, because it's not that easy sitting in a cold bath.
Totally.
But we get a lot of really positive feedback about the shared experience, and you know, people, how long have you been doing this for? It's my first time. And some go, it was my first time 3 weeks ago and I only got 3 minutes, but now I'm getting 11 minutes out of my 30-minute booking. So you'll be right, just keep going. And it's still fascinating, this industry, because you walk into a lot of gyms, give you your programs, but a lot of gyms, like a Fitness First, you don't get a program, you just go and do what you want. But we're essentially saying to people, within guidelines, this is what you should feel comfortable doing, what you're comfortable doing. You don't need to do 30 minutes in the ice bath because you saw a Wim Hof documentary and that's what he does. If 2 minutes is enough for you, and you'll feel it because your body will tell you if it's hard.
You'll know, yeah.
So whatever suits you is kind of the desired rate at the moment. And, you know, there's a whole lot of data that's still coming out, and the Hubermans of the world are still talking and sort of backing this up. A 2-minute ice bath is as good for you as a 10-minute is for someone who's been doing it for a while. So you don't have to be in there for 30 minutes to get the value for your visit. You can use your 30 minutes having 10 minutes of comfort in a hot bath or a sauna, and the other 10 minutes can be brutally hard, but you still feel good about it.
And there's some days you'll wake up in the morning and go, I don't need the ice bath. I don't need that punch in the nose today.
No, I just want to feel better in my mind. Some days it's about going in hot and just relaxing.
Yeah, totally. So this, I can see why this is taking off, and people are talking about it all the time. There's 100 podcasts on the topic. Wellness is really center to most people. They're very conscious of it, both mentally and physically. Now, you talked about expanding to the US. Why the US? What's the appeal? What's the competition like? What are you noticing the opportunity looks like?
Yeah, we lived there for a couple of years. So like a year after we opened Coogee, I went there and coached a rugby team, which is owned by Adam Gilchrist, the founder and owner of CEO at the time of F45. And the plan was to have I'd never played overseas. I had that injury that I might have played overseas in that time, but we thought of it on a few fronts, like the family experience with four kids. My eldest was 12 at the time. I was like, if we don't go now, it'll be too late to take Evie, my oldest daughter.
In high school and all that, yeah.
So we went over to start up a rugby team in LA. I was coach.
It was a pretty hot rugby team from what I heard.
It was good, yeah. And we got Adam Fry was our general manager. Dave Dennis was our captain. He was my captain at the Waratahs. Matt Giddo, Adam Ashley Cooper was still playing, good mates of ours. The wives and kids were all mates. So we kind of went over to LA with a group of 20 to 30 people, and there's a lot of kids in that team, which just made the environment so much fun. And, everyone was worried about LA. It wasn't a sane time to move to LA, according to my parents. It was the election, COVID, and the race riots, and my dad thought I was crazy.
Yeah, but
believe it or not, there are some really safe and healthy places in America and communities driven by kids and junior sport and similar to what we've got here. So we moved to Hermosa in LA, and family loved it, did 2 years there. And we only probably came home because there was issues with the ownership and the team, and the team got disqualified. And so we had a good first year, won the comp, second year got disqualified the week of the finals. And so it all kind of came to an abrupt end, but we were planning actively to get a recovery open there at the time. Yeah. And so we've just signed a lease about 3 months ago in LA, and that's in city permit plan at the moment. So we're hoping by late summer USA talk, August, September, that we'll be open. It'll be our first one in the States. And I've looked at the US as I had a different perception of them from here. We talk, they probably talk about the Aussie a bit differently to how the Aussie actually is. We do the same. I just found them really engaged and excited about other people's success. It's such a large country. There's opportunities there. There's some competitors like there always is, but there's not too many that are doing the exact same offerings of what we have. And what you learn in America is you can be one of the top 5 or 10 in industry and really have a lot of success. And in Australia, you've probably got to be one of the top 1, 2, or 3, and we still like to be, but there's definitely a different approach to the Aussies and the size of our economy, and we kind of jump over each other and copy, and gets a little bit competitive in that business side of things here. So we'll still open several more studios here in Oz, but we'll definitely be opening more over there with a shift of having part of our head office over there at some stage. And we just probably view that the ability to value at a higher number, whether that means an exit, whether it means another raise to keep going, that probably gives you, the USA opportunity gives you probably a few more eyeballs and a few more targets for an exit and a higher value.
Yeah, awesome. For a guy who's come off the rugby field and had a few franchises, and now you're talking about raises, I'm sure the guys around you are, got some strengths.
Yeah.
And you probably bring different things to the table. When you look at, you talked about the three of you, so it's Nick, Trent, and yourself.
Yeah, Trev.
Trev. What's the what do you think your superpower is when it comes to business, and where is the learning that you're going through? Because we're always learning. In my experience in business. What are you noticing at the moment?
Well, you're forever learning. Like I'd never knew how to set up and structure a capital raise, and that's where Trev's bread and butter is. And some of the key lessons, we learn early, and that was Trev's advice was this is a concept that you've got to prove. So before you prove your concept, don't ask anyone for money. Use your own money. Don't pay yourself. And hustle and work hard on the side to make sure that you've got other revenues to keep your family going. And then when you prove it, and don't give up any equity, obviously, because you've not asked anyone for any money, Then when you've proved that you can raise at a higher value, you might even be able to get debt versus equity at some times. And so then we went in this path to raise, and it was Trev guiding Nick and I about the conversations to have. And I'd never heard of a convertible note 9 months ago. I didn't know the difference between debt and equity and different class shares, and learning all that pretty quickly. But yeah. you do realize, like, you know, the experts of this field, they had to learn this stuff at some stage as well.
So I've always been learnable.
I've always been pretty open-minded about learning different parts on the run. And we did a raise, which was a private raise, friends and family, and we had a couple of, we were clear on that. We didn't just want money, because we had ability to get money off people, but we wanted to make sure we had partners, I suppose. And so being able to bring in, you know, experienced CMOs and CFOs and legal aid, and I thought I put that on silent. I'm sorry. It doesn't stop, by the way, as you know. Yeah. to be able to bring in the right people. So that's kind of what we raised with. We essentially raised using getting ourselves an advisory board. Michael Hooper came in on that raise, and like he's still involved in the bit. He's really active and wants to get heavily involved. And I had a couple of really good chats with him, and Hoops was really keen on working out how I learned this sort of stuff. And I said, I couldn't even actually tell you where I learned. Like, I didn't get a degree in small business. I did a couple of diplomas while I was playing rugby, but I said, I clean the pools at Coogee, and I'm there every day doing things, and I'm watching how people interact with each other. I'm sort of learning every part of the business. I don't like putting my hand down a drain every few months and cleaning out that sort of stuff, but it has to be done. So you learn every part of it, but we've been really well guided from the business acumen. So if you sort of wanted to see the structure of the business, it's Trev's the chairman. Nick and I are, Nick and my wife Lara are now full time. I'm coaching rugby, so I'm not taking any money out of the business. And it's worth, when we work out how we structure it, I'm probably more involved in finding the partners and the property and the location. Nick works closer with the designers and the builders to make sure it's on design and on brand. And then once we're close to opening, it gets handed over to Lara. Now, these are for the partner studios, which Cronulla and Manly have a partner. Coogee and LA will be, the first one will be all head co-owned. So at certain studios, we do have a partnership model, and different to a franchise model. And we just felt early on we didn't want a franchise, because there's so much more to this than opening a gym, which is what I've done previously. You've got these big, heavy pools with water. You've got plumbing. You've got engineering aspect of it. You've got sanitary that's needed to be embedded, and you've got to make sure there's a little bit more risk on these studios. So the partner model works for us at the moment. We're involved, and we've had a lot of people inquire about locations, and we're keen to grow, but we're not a franchise, so we don't just sell territories and take money and let them open wherever they want. Where you go, we go, and where you put money in, we put money in. So that's, we've had good success with our Dean Jamison, our partner in Cronulla, and Dave Kennett, he's the partner in Manly. So they're the face of Manly, and we want people to feel that. And the plan with those guys is, for those partners, we don't want 20 partners with one studio each. We want three or four partners with four or five studios each. So, yeah.
It's an interesting way to do it, right? You get that skin in the game, you get that level of commitment. How do you see the difference around the return or the win for the partner versus a franchise model? What do you see in the benefit to them?
Yeah, that's all pretty clearly defined, and we're really upfront with partners at the same time, because we don't want someone to come in and open a studio with us and then all of a sudden find out that the head co is selling, and there's value for them if we can accumulate the value of every studio by having the majority of every studio. We're increasing the value of that partner's studio, and so that's written into their agreement, that their partnership agreement. They know how they know how their studio can get valued at a certain point. They know that we've set up the business to one day consider selling or dropping down our equity, and there's multiple options at the time. We want to make sure the partner is really clear. So if they've got one studio, it's going to take them a little bit of time to try and get the value of that studio up, whereas if their studio is one of X amount around the locations we've got them, that's right. They get the collective leverage. And so that probably gives them the confidence that we're in it together. They know what will happen if the company exits, all those sort of things. And we're 3, 5, 7, 10 years away from that. But we wanted to make sure we were clear on those conversations early, because, you know, people are putting in money, and that's something we'd never done before. So we were really conscious that, you're taking money from partners or investors, you got to spend this wisely, and the pressure's on, I suppose, which is a good thing to be.
It's a healthy pressure.
Yeah.
Well, it sort of, it reminds me of the same mindset that you probably had in either coaching and or playing, in that, you know, I see business as a process of winning. What have you learned about putting the right winners around you, and what have been the parallels between rugby career and what you're doing now?
I often like think back to like teams is what I've known. So I often think back to that, and like, there's always problems, and I think you've just got to tackle them with an outlook that you're going to solve it. You're not going to squash it or hide it or forget about it. Like, problems are a good thing. And I think that's my ability to, I think my, one of my strengths is I don't view problems as things that can't be overcome. I just view them as something that you've got to move through and get over. So I've always been a bit aim for the stars and keep reaching, and you might hurt yourself reaching a few times, but you'll get there. So we've got to have a similar approach as a company. And but at the same time, like, you can't have the same three type of personalities always trying to go big. You've got to have the yin and the yang. And I'm not someone that dots too many I's and crosses the T's. Like, I leave a little bit in my wake of a few fires and whatnot, but I don't think I get too overwhelmed with big opportunities. And I know, like, my wife's different to me. Like, she'll kind of roll her eyes at, she comes back and I've got another idea about potentially going down the path of developing our own products, because we've been fixing and making our own for so long now. And so there's a lot of avenues this business could go down, and some we will, but we've got to make sure it doesn't distract us from what the key offering is, like the bricks and mortar studio. So yeah, it's a startup, you know, like, we've just signed a lease 2 days ago for our first office, which is a couple of yards down the road from our Coogee location. So up until now, we've been working in different offices and cafes and, you know, hotspotting off, you know, shared public website, public Wi-Fi. And it's been a real battle to get to that point, but getting the office space and signing additional leases and even putting together a head co, like, who were one day a week and now they're looking to move full time. Like, that's cool in itself, seeing that side of things evolve.
Oh, mate, it's amazing. And there's people listening to this that have been through exactly that journey or going through it right now, mate. It's whether it's working at the cafe or it's in someone's garage or down at a clubhouse somewhere and getting a PowerPoint and plugging the computer in. Like, it's got to happen somehow.
It does, yeah. And so you don't forget that. It's all part of the fun of it.
Yeah. Tell me, you shared this story with me yesterday when we were having a bit of a chat, and we were talking about you as a young bloke, and this is probably more about some of the sort of psychology around you and why you're doing what you're doing, I guess. But I'm curious to understand, you're a B-grade footy player.
Mm.
And I didn't expect that, actually, when I first met you.
High school I was.
High school, was it? Yeah. And so when I first met, I was like,
I was the best 5-year-old in the country. No, I'm joking.
Best 5-year-old?
I went through that stage where.
You went to the Bs.
When I went to year seven and when puberty decided I wasn't ready for it, and I was not ready for a couple of years. I was a late developer.
Yeah.
Yeah, year 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, I couldn't get an A team at my school.
Yeah, wow.
And I got moved positions. I got told I had to play halfback and 5'8". And
I just never would have expected that. But
yeah.
What did you get out of that stage of your life that relates to what you're doing now?
So I had to sort of work hard to get where I had to in sport, and even at a senior level. Like, I came through the club system. I wasn't in the representative teams outside of school. I played a bit of sevens after Colts, Aussie sevens, but I came through the club system. And again, I was a late developer in club. I did 2 or 3 years at Randwick in the lower grades before I got to first grade. So I kind of felt like I was always that guy that didn't have an issue with the talent or the skill or understanding the game, but physically I just needed to work hard and be persevere. And as a young kid, I always like loved it, lived and breathed footy. That's all I wanted to do. Dad was a rugby guy at Randwick. Mum worked at New South Wales Rugby League. I was a Tigers tragic, still am. Like, I went through, I love both sports. And when I got to that age of year seven, I'd never been in anything but the top team. And I was like, what's this about? Like, why didn't I make that side? I see my son going through the same thing now. He's at the same age. And mum was just always, so dad was a rugby player. Mum was a really good netballer. I could go out the backyard as a kid and kick a footy with mum. She'd be making me kick both feet. Mum can kick both feet. She can play tennis, squash with both hands.
Yeah.
So mum's a real sports tragic. Mum wanted me to play rugby league when I was 4 or 5 because I wanted to. Dad didn't want me to. He thought I was too young, but mum was always like, no, he'll be right. Obviously, they just knew I'd be okay.
Yeah.
And I can see that now because I've got 4 kids and 2 of my boys, they're both pretty different. My eldest boy is quite passive and lovely. He's a awesome little boy, but he's not as aggressive or as full on as his 5-year-old brother is. And I'm only just seeing that now because my 5-year-old started rugby and I was like, oh, that's what mum and dad mean. He's a little bit of a terror, like he just goes for it. And so mum just knew that I had something. And so she just always said to me, like politely, she'd said to coaches, like, how embarrassing. She'd see coaches at Waverley who didn't pick me in the A's, and she'd see him at the Randwick games on, and she'd say, oh, that's all right. I know he didn't pick him in the A's, but it's okay. Like, he'll play for the Wallabies one day. And I just thought, oh, mum, what is she going to say? Oh,
mum, put the pressure on.
But it wasn't pressure. Mum was she just kept saying to me, mate, don't worry, the cream will rise to the top. She always used to say that.
Yeah.
And so I just had this, always had kind this. Kind of a confidence that you get from it. Yeah, yeah. Like, it's like, yeah, I got, dad's very patient. I didn't get that side, unfortunately. Calm and patient. And mum's really, you know, she's very direct, you know, where you sit with her, but she was always very, probably a biased mum, but she, you talk to her now and she's like, no, I knew you would. Like, I knew from the second I saw you pick up a footy that you were going to do something. So that confidence kind of helped me transfer that. I hope it's never come across as arrogance, but it's, I've never viewed things impossible. You know, I always thought when I was going around with mum and dad would give me a hard time when I left school because I wasn't getting a job and I wasn't going to university. Actually, dad told me, he said, mate, you got to go and get a job or go to university. I'd been like 6 weeks of summer down the beach, surfing all day and on the oval in the afternoon. And dad just said, mate, this is enough. Like, you've done nothing. Your mates are at uni, they're working. Get a job or go to university. So I went up to the University of New South Wales and I got a job there. So I said to dad, I got a job.
And I went to uni.
Yeah. And he was like, he kind of rolled his eyes at me, but that's kind of what I've been like my whole life, being able to pull one over his eyes a little bit. And mum's blind in confidence in me was something that has helped me, and it helps me now because I think, you know, I don't look at too many things and think they're not possible.
She has the golden touch. What do you think of recovery?
Well, she could do with it now. Like she's had knees and hips and all the things that I know that are coming. Like, and again, like, yeah, like I think I don't talk a huge amount about this to mum. I live next door to them, but yeah. You just talk anything but that. But they're always really curious to find out how it's going. And the funny thing is there's always something new when I talk to them, like something else has popped up and I can just see them going, oh my God, like how's he? Yeah, I never thought I'd be doing this sort of stuff because I grew up just wanting to play sport. But then you realize when you're playing sport,
you got to have something other. Yeah. So yeah, mum, well, and is that the part of the target audience? What, like if you describe to me, who do you typically see in a recovery studio? Is it the 60s, 50s, 70s sort of range or is it 40s kind of weekend warriors?
So mum and dad, like they're probably not the market now because they're 70s.
Okay.
But I definitely think 10 years ago, this would have been perfect for them.
Yeah.
We are seeing a much higher, and we compare it to what we had at the gym next door. So we're next door to F45. So we see the average age of recovery customers. It's probably not the 20 to 25-year-old males because they're bulletproof and spend every spare money on socializing, but it's definitely the 25 to 50, 60-year-old female and probably the 28, 30-year-old male to 60, 65.
That's when they start to come in,
And even some of the other services like the hyperbaric chamber, there's another product we're looking at which is sort of in that VO2 sort of enhancing side of things. But the hyperbaric chamber is something that's starting to get used by a lot of elderly patients because it's positive for skin healing or wound repair, altitude sickness. There's anti-aging studies behind it. So, yeah, there's a lot of people that are now coming in purely for anti-aging and general mental well-being. Like it's not just a place people come and use for physical well-being. We see a massive number of people come through on the Monday morning or the Sunday afternoon and they're fine. They're not sore. They just know that it clears their mind and it helps them start their week or finish their week or get them through a busy weekend or a big weekend. So it's been overwhelming the number of people that are coming in for like either mental health or just general like emotional well-being and their state of mind.
I'm assuming you use it.
Heaps, yeah.
What's your go-to? What's your strategy?
I've never liked the ice bars, to be honest. But, yeah. And I'm scarred from what I did in sport with them. Like, we were thrown in them 20 years ago and...
In a bin?
Yeah, we were in a bin and we had to have 5 minutes up to our neck and it would have probably been below 5 degrees that one. I think back to one off season in particular, but I always knew that I felt better after it. Mm. So I like the sauna and cold bath. That's probably my preferred. And to be fair, I go and sit in the hyperbaric chamber once or twice a week. I've got to cut a video every week for rugby. Like, you show the boys a review from the weekend that you just played and then a preview. So on a Monday and a Thursday, I know that I can get distracted quite easily. And if I'm not careful, I can take 10 phone calls and 8 emails and I've forgotten what I'm doing. But if I go into the chamber, I literally lock myself in the hyperbaric chamber for an hour on a Monday and Thursday and get all of my video work done. It's like my best hour of the week.
Yeah, wow. So what, laptop open?
Laptop open. It's a little desk in there as well.
Yeah.
You're sitting in a nice chair.
All the oxygen pumping into the brain.
Yeah. And that's just taking you below sea level. But it's... There's benefit in it, but in all honesty, I love it because I can go and just lock myself away. And the same thing with the normal tech boots. You can sit on those and get the laptop on your legs and get moving.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, you multitask. There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Multitasking, that's one of my, like, in all honesty.
Is that one of your things?
Yeah. And yeah, absolutely. Like, I've always been able to do it. And that'll sometimes come across as not concentrating or not listening. But I do, it's every male likes to think they can multitask.
Well, you can definitely have many balls in the air.
Yeah.
You can't do two tasks at once typically.
I have the ability.
It can be hard.
I can listen to what someone's saying. They think I'm not listening. My wife in particular, she'll often say, "You're not listening to the thing I'm saying, are you?" And I'll just repeat the last sentence. I can just see the anger in her eyes because I've listened to a word. She's like, "Well, you're not taking it in." I said, "Well, I did, but yeah."
Maybe I just don't want to take it.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying that. They're your words.
You sound like you've been doing an argument too, man.
Yeah, that's part of it. Like, when you're doing multiple things, you got to be able to balance it. So, yeah.
Nice. So what's the thing that I'm observing in this industry, and I guess for any industry that's maturing, you tend to see compliance and regulation start to sit around it, right? It always happens. And this industry appears still very mature. I was up at Noosa and I went up to a place that's similar to you guys, probably competitive, but conceptually, they're all well set up, I'm sure. But cleanliness, hygiene, there's a lot of that crosses your mind. Go, how do they clean it? Or what do they do? Is this too long in an ice bath? And what happens could I get sick from being there too long? So I'm imagining that's crossing your mind as you scale.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I think initially, if you looked at what our staff go through every, like, they're testing pools 3 times a day and they're sending pictures of strip testing on WhatsApp and they're logging it in. We're actually just going through a large upgrade at Coogee at the moment. One of the interesting things at the moment is everyone knows the value of ice bathing and sauna. And so a lot of people are doing them at home, which is great. And then at home is fine. You can do exactly what you want at home. But the second you become a commercial, or you commercialize that and you take money from someone, there's some type of responsibility. And you can spend, for an example, for our large pools in all of our studios, we've got 4-meter pools in every one of them, and we've got some smaller ones as well. But you can have a $2,000 filtration system, or you can have a $15,000 to $20,000 filtration system. And learning more about that over the last few weeks, especially at the moment, because we're looking at a few different options on our own side of production, because we're opening multiple more locations. That's the plan. It's like, well, there's got to be some part of this that we're really, really comfortable doing ourselves.
Yeah, so expanding your control of the value chain.
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
And so just seeing, we're preparing as if there's compliance coming, and you're seeing a lot of people that are opening studios and they'll put a really big sauna in, and then they'll put 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 small single baths, because the large ones are expensive and they cost more with the filtration, the chiller system, and they also put a lot more weight on the floor. So sometimes first floor locations can't have the large pools.
Yeah.
So a lot of people go, instead of the large pool on a first floor, we're on a suspended slab in Coogee, so we've had to put on a frame to distribute the weight, and you got to make sure you've got ceiling height and ventilation and all these things we had no idea about.
Like, you learn a lot about fit-outs.
Totally, yeah. Honestly, like, yeah. People will testify I'm the worst handyman in the world, but you've had to learn a lot about where these things go. So a lot of people will now put 5 or 4 single baths, and they're the ones that you can use at home, and they're great, and they're good if you get in once or twice a day and they stay cold and they stay clean. But if you're starting to put 20, 30, 40 people in each one of those over a 24-hour period, that rises the temperature.
Yes.
You know, the temperature of our body is higher than what a cold bath is.
Yes.
So multiple people get in, the pools get warmer. So the systems that they give you for at home aren't necessarily strong enough to keep that temperature down to 5 to 10 degrees all day.
Yes.
And the number of people getting in, their skin comes off.
The cleanliness.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So like there's a lot of those out there now that what works at home doesn't necessarily work in a commercial setting. And we're seeing that at the moment. We're seeing a lot of companies and gyms and wellness and yoga and Pilates all wanting to add on some form of wellness. And it is more expensive than most people thought. Per square meter, these things cost more than what a gym would, because what's the most expensive thing about a fit out at home? It's probably your kitchen or your bathroom. And this is a large bathroom, essentially. It's got to be waterproof. It's got to be tiled. It's got to have the right plumbing. And so there is a lot of that stuff that we're just moving along as if to make sure that if and when that compliance or regulators come and we work out exactly where this sits in the industry, that there's no issue with what we're buying or what we're providing.
It makes sense. And I think strategically what I'm hearing as well is that you're trying to stay in your lane and be really, really bloody good at what you do.
Yeah.
You know, if you can focus on being experts in this space, I mean, rather than being a gym owner and having a sauna as an add-on, this is your core business. This is what you're known for. This is the value that you're trying to focus on. I think that's really interesting. What's surprised you about business? What's something that over the years, and even if it's been in the more recent time, what's something that surprised you?
I probably a little bit of the negotiation and, you know, like the hustle of the world and the thing. We've probably grown up in a world where you can clearly see if you performed or didn't, and you know, a handshake is sometimes enough in the world that I was in. But you sort of see here, like when you're talking to big companies about commercial leasing and things like that, there's, you know, it takes a long time to get those deals done, and things aren't always as they are said to you. So and that's one side of the business. And so there's always, that's probably the one you're learning the most. It's like you can do everything right all week, and you can just have some things that go, that went against us. It's almost like you won 6 out of 6 deals the week before, conversations, and then the next week for no reason you've had a deal taken off the table that you were just about to commit to a site, those sort of things. So I think the real world of business and understanding the amount of red tape for certain things when you're talking site negotiation with large landlords or multi-site developers, and that can be a world within itself. So
Yeah, it's a big one. I mean, for me and a lot of my clients, that learning is so consistent, right? We talk about this idea of the broken leg principle, which is, you know, you're there to achieve something, but your son could break their leg tomorrow.
Yeah.
Right. And at some point you have to still find a way to succeed, but deal with the fact that something really important has gone wrong. And no one in their right mind is going to say, well, we'll just ignore the broken leg.
Yeah.
But if you only focus on the broken leg and you don't focus on moving towards achieving on both sides, you'll end up failing on both fronts, right?
And that's a big challenge at the moment. Like, my wife's full time on the business, and there's always parent guilt. Like, we have 4 kids and we're really busy with things. But I'm also really enjoying the fact that my kids are seeing both mum and dad really give something a crack.
Yeah, building something. Yeah, yeah.
And seeing mum work, you know, get the kids to bed and still be up at 10 o'clock working on the computer and doing it all again the next day. Like, that's something I think, you know, I've got 2 kids, 15 and 13, and then we've got younger ones, 7 and 5. Funnily enough, the seven-year-old is the one that always asks us about the business, and I think she's the money hungry one out of the 4.
Okay.
And but seeing them watch, because my wife didn't do anything with the businesses initially. Like, it wasn't until we had our 3rd child and I was really busy with running the gym and started another job in rugby while I was commentating. My wife sort of just saw I was stretched, and she's like, do you need me to help? And I was like, yeah, it'd be cool if you could. And she's jumped right into it, and we've since had our 4th child. And, you know, like, watching her.
Jeez, you can't keep your hands full, mate.
Oh, yeah, I know. I think that's, we only know that. And a lot of people sort of laugh at us as like, oh, they're just so busy. And it's like, we've got 4 kids. We're going to be busy no matter what. So
why not lay a bit more?
That's right. Like, I've always had that approach. Like, because my thought is, like, you can only get X amount of done between the time you wake up and go to bed. Just keep putting one foot after the other. And if you don't get it done, it's not the end of the world, as long as there's no broken legs. Like, that's the priority. Like,
yeah.
But there's definite parent guilt, making sure that, you know, you don't miss kids' sport and school and activities and things like that. And yeah, that's part of it. But I also think the value of seeing mum and dad and a few of their close friends do something pretty exciting, and hopefully at some stage you'll have a fair bit to show for it. The kids will see that some things are worth fighting for.
Yeah, totally. Well, talking about what fighting for, what's the future look like? I mean, you talked about international expansion to the US.
Yeah.
I'm assuming Australia, there's still some opportunity here. What's it look like over the next five? If we're sitting here in 5 years' time, yeah, what would you like to be talking about?
Yeah, look, we've got a few things that are confirmed coming forward. We've got our first site in overseas will be open this year in Los Angeles. And then we've got our first site with Aventure, which is a wave pool company. They're opening their first wave pool in Perth. So we're in that precinct. It's the Wave Garden wave, the same wave that's at Urban Surf in Melbourne. And we've got a relationship with them, hoping to be like an exclusive wellness provider at their additional sites that they're working through. What we've sort of seen the evolution of the industry is, like, 3-4 years ago, no one really knew what wellness was. And so you go to a landlord and you got to pay market rate. You're not really getting any, you might get a little bit of rent free, you're not getting much capital. But now that we feel like the concept's proven and we've been around for a while in this industry, and we don't think that we know we didn't invent ice baths or saunas or chambers or Normatec, but we didn't copy anyone when we saw that there wasn't a space that had all of this for a large group of people. So we're really proud of the fact that we went down this wellness trend before wellness was a huge trend or a huge, what people thought might have been a fad. And since then, you're now seeing a lot of the large developers, retail shopping centers, they're not wanting this in their locations, they're needing it. So for them, for big companies to sell 400 apartments on top of a retail, it used to be, let's get a gym or a cafe in downstairs. That was the sort of the anchor tenant. And now it's shifting to wellness.
Let's get a recovery.
That's right. And so a lot of the opportunities are, you know, there's a lot more opportunity for multi-site agreements and larger capital contribution and rent-free periods from landlords, because they're seeing the value in either tenants or owners upstairs having this facility at their precinct. So that's probably the path. I would say that, you know, we're looking at Oz to get around that 10 plus studios in the next couple of years, with the plan to have, you know, probably more than that over in the States. And like, we're talking to locations at the moment, some possible partners in Toronto and Vancouver, and there's just so many places over there. It's just such a big world, and it's still, as I said, like, every college in the States would have these facilities. Yeah. Every good college would have them. Every professional sporting team, but not everyone is involved at a college level. Everyone doesn't play for a professional sporting team. So there is still an opportunity over there. And then there's a whole lot of avenues from the marketing side of thing to take this. There's an events opportunity, because every athlete in the world is now realizing this is part of their preparation for big events. And a lot of the great events are mobile.
Now you need a competition to see who can stay in the ice the longest.
Yeah,
that's a little gimmick.
I don't want to be responsible for someone.
Yeah.
One of our actual, one of Nick's brother-in-law, he did an ice mile challenge. He swam the English Channel, bit of a sore shoulder, and then his next challenge was to break some ice mile record. So his way of training for that was to strap a bungee cord to him before we opened, like in the hours of 6 a.m. We open at 8 a.m. or whatever, and he'd swim for 45 minutes in 5 degrees. It was madness. It was madness on every form, but
lunatic.
Yeah, we're not liable for that type of behaviour, and he knew exactly what he was getting himself in for. But I brought a couple of mates in early one morning, and I was like, what's he doing? I was like, I don't know, he's just swimming. I was like, is that the hot bath? I was like, no, that's the cold one, like 5 degrees, 45 minutes. You know, it's like when you move in an ice bath, it makes it worse. You don't want to just sit there and breathe.
Yeah.
You're not sitting still when you're swimming with a bungee cord on you.
That is a man who's reframed the experience completely. Mm-hmm. Jeez. Yeah, I don't think I was being a bit silly with the competition. But
we get people that come in and say, how long has someone done in here? What's the longest?
I have no doubt there's a competitive, like, people around, right?
Yeah, like there's all those sort of underwater challenges that people are doing in ice in the the Atlantic, and it's insane. But yeah, we're not breaking records for ice baths. We're just keeping people happy and healthy, hopefully.
That's it. It's not the CrossFit Games, right?
No, that's right. Yeah.
Just a quick question on the expansion. This is something that I think people would be curious about. But we did talk offline just about people coming back to work as well. And I guess the idea that particularly larger corporates who are looking to have different environmental changes that make it more appealing to be in the office or be around the office. Is that something that you think is serious?
Yeah, like the shared workspace, like that world is evolving to, well, if you've got a shared workspace and we're putting in a communal cafe and a ping pong table here for the work, what else do they want? And this is what they want. They want to feel good and train well. But we opened Coogee really early in 2020, I believe, just before COVID, or late 2019. Yeah, late 2019. And we always thought that the CBD would be our second location. You know, the city life was thriving. Luckily, we didn't, because it all went belly up pretty soon pretty after. Quick, and the CBD was something that probably hasn't recovered fully yet. It is coming back to life, but yes, the Sydney CBD, that is. So there's a lot of big companies out there that have a lot of good corporate health packages, and they want their employees to be healthy and to be performing at their best. So they're also trying to get their employees back 5 days a week into the city. And there's, you know, for some reason, employees, the big corporations, have to be very mindful of how they get their staff back. So
yeah,
we do think that play of being able to be, of being in locations where there's a high number of corporates and giving them the opportunity to be part of, or to use the facility. So the CBD play is really interesting at the moment. And as a result of the number of people that are no longer working from home, the rates of what you would once pay for commercial space in the CBD and what a landlord's prepared to give up, they might have been prepared to give up 15, 20, 30% of the lease in capital and rent free 5 years ago. They might not needed to give up any because it was so desirable. But now big companies need to get their staff back. Commercial landlords need to incentivize the big companies to get all their staff back to work. So the offerings that are out there, not dissimilar to the developments and the buildings that already exist in there, there are some lucrative offers to come back into the CBD. And I do think the market is there for it. Like, I think having spent a little bit of time in the CBD the last few months, looking around at some places, it is coming back to life. It used to be a 5 day a week buzzing. It's definitely not five. It's most people are doing what, three at work,
three
from home,
two off.
And then that whole the at home option is, that's another huge market in itself. The wellness at home. So yeah, we're aware of those, and we think that there's an opportunity at a certain point down the line to make sure that the at home is still an option or something that we can be involved in that play
to complement the
makes
complete sense. So watch this space, you think?
Yeah, it's we've put a lot of time into like an R&D side of things to make sure that, you know, the at home market isn't a competitor. It can be a customer potentially. So there's a whole lot of, and that's the sort of stuff you like to think about, and you come home with a few ideas and you got to quickly work out, like, you know, okay, they're great ideas, but how realistic are they? Are they going to distract us from what our next job is, to get another studio open? And there's pros and cons of it all, and you got to weigh that up, and you got to make some decisions, and you've got to make some decisions quickly, and you got to back yourself. And
Totally. Well, there's people on this call who I know would self-describe themselves as the shiny things person.
And
they're very creative traditionally. Yeah. You know, they get good ideas. It's just ensuring that they're making good decisions about which ones they drop or not.
And then how you can implement them, I suppose.
Exactly. Can you bring it to life? Yeah. So that's very cool. Mate, I've been really impressed with everything, mate. I'm very excited to see where recovery goes. It's, for me, I can see a very logical, upward path for it, just purely as a consumer and someone observing the marketplace. So it sounds really exciting, and I want to see it succeed for you, mate. Probably last question. I often ask this to most of my guests, and it's something that reveals a little bit about your leadership and the way you think about building a business. And I ask, what have you changed your mind on over the years that's fundamental to the way you believe and approach either problems or the way you develop business? So what's something you've changed your mind on that's been really instrumental to your journey?
I don't know if I've necessarily changed my mind. Potentially that whole the at-home option. Probably thought at one stage this will be a place where everyone will just come into a bricks and mortar location because it's going to be cheaper for them. But probably seeing that that's not going to be the case and realizing that, you know, this industry is going to go down a few different and it's not going to be everyone walking in your doors. So I think working out that they're going to go, other gyms are going to start bringing this stuff on or gyms. And so that almost shifting from thinking what was a competitor could be a customer, that's definitely one way of shifting. But probably the big thing I've learned and I don't know if I've changed my mind from this, but it's just I've sort of doubled down on it, I suppose. It's with all staff and same in rugby with your assistant coaches and with your kids, with people that are working for you, you've got to trust them. Like there's people that are experts in their field. And even though it's our business, you know, you can't sit over the shoulder of someone and second guess them and ask someone else, well, how did that email come across? How did that conversation, what was said? You actually just have to trust them and let them go. And I think I'm very fine with that. Like I'm definitely not a micromanager. You know, As I said, I don't need to know information about everything. I don't need to know every single conversation that's going on. I think if you just trust the right people and you allow them to do their job, that they'll probably, you know, they'll thrive and we want that. So.
And you've seen the results of that in the business so far, right?
Yeah, we get great feedback from our staff and our staff at the studio in Coogee, that's a head co-owned, and letting them know that, like, I want the manager of Coogee, I want people to think it's their studio. And most people that come into the shop probably do. So I don't want people to think that it's mine, because if I want, I can't be there every day, and I've never wanted it to be the face of it. You know, we're the business, but the studio has to, Cronulla's, face of Cronulla is Dean. People, it's Dean's studio. Dave for Manly. I'm very comfortable giving people a lot of leeway and at the same time making sure you don't get taken advantage of. But
probably one of the beauties of being a coach that maybe other people don't get the luxury of is you have this forced environment of not being able to get on the field with them.
Yeah.
And in business, it's really easy to be able to walk over and go, okay, let me have a look at that. Or yeah, what are you doing there? Or like the barrier to trust is different, right?
Well, I absolutely think that when you're coaching, whether you're a boss or your coach, whatever the word might be, like I often say, I can't really make the players better, but I can set up an environment. I don't have much control over, you know, the 24 year old players, they've been doing this for years, their ability to become good passers, or like they've probably developed those skills now. I'm not going to make them better, but I'm not necessarily responsible for them playing better individually. I'm responsible for creating an environment where they can be themselves and an environment where they can ask you questions away from rugby, like life questions. I think that's really important. So what I do realize, that's the other thing you learn, the longer you do anything for, you realize as you go through life, the longer you go, there's more and more problems. You know, people are, there's family problems, there's financial problems, there's work problems. Everyone's got a problem. And so I know when guys come through the door at training that there's always an issue. And so you're mindful of that. You've got to try and give them an environment where they can talk about it if they want, they can talk to someone, they can talk to me, or they can go to someone within the business or within the team and they can talk to them without their coach ever finding out. So yeah, I'd like to think that I don't micromanage, I don't overcoach. I let them be who they are and I just hopefully try and provide an environment. And I think recovery's done that. I think people are really enjoying knowing that we're in this really popular trend at the moment, which isn't going anywhere. Like we know that. We're an aging population. I said to you the other day when we spoke, like not many 70-year-olds ice bath, but lots of 40 and 50-year-olds ice bath. And so in 20 years, lots of 50, 60, 70-year-olds will be ice bathing because it's going to be around. So I think people are appreciating the fact that they're on this journey with us and they can see the growth in the industry and also the company, and that's pretty exciting. So yeah, I enjoy that side of it.
Yeah, and you're never going to take away that human need to want to be healthy, to want to be in good shape and actually extend your life, right?
And that's something you're so conscious of. You see things every now and then that pop out of you. I saw something the other day. It was like you spend the healthiest years trying to become wealthy, and then you get wealthy trying to become healthy again. Once you're wealthy, you spend that wealth trying to become healthy.
Very so true.
Making sure that there's balance in it. Like we can't work in this industry and talk about health and wellness and longevity and let it become too much for us. So you got to look after that side of things.
Yeah, totally. Well, mate, I do hope you look after yourself. It's been a pleasure. I really enjoyed it. Where can people find out about recovery if they want to kind of get in outside of your nice hat?
Yeah, it's we actually turns out we spelt the word wrong as well and everything. So we got it wrong when we set it up, but it's recoverywithanie.com.au. No, that was actually how we intended to spell it. So we got to trademark that.
Bit cheeky.
So yeah. recovery.com.au. There's Coogee, Cronulla and Manly locations with a few more coming soon. And obviously all over the social media handles, that I think it's at recoveryau. Yeah, you can find us there and pop into a studio and come down and try us out. There's an intro offer at every studio, which is gets people through the doors and gives them an affordable chance to try it over 2 weeks. And then there's multiple options to stay on, whether it's once every couple of weeks or memberships. There's plenty of ways to be involved.
Mm. And if I want to be a partner, just call you.
Yeah, steve@recovery.com.au.
Very good, mate. All right. Well, thanks so much. I really appreciate it, Steve. It's been awesome.
Thanks, Brad. And good on you for what you're doing, mate. It's been awesome to listen to similar stories in the industry.
Yeah, no, I'm enjoying it. It's this is a little passion project for me. So just like you, I don't know where it's going to take me, actually, to be fair, but we'll see where it goes.
Let's keep going. One foot in front of the
other. One foot in front of the other. Thanks, brother.
Thanks, mate.